Welcome to 9 Points Started with a Dream podcast. Our goal is to showcase the stories of athletes and the community that supports them by being authentic about their journey. Here's your host, Jacoby Gillum.
Yo, welcome back to the podcast. I'm your host, as always, Jacoby Gillum. Today's guest is Leah Edmond. Leah is a professional volleyball player. She's a teacher. She's an advocate and so much more. And Leah shares her journey, and it's like a calm confidence, she calls it. And this journey is something that's inspired, and also we talk about, you know, accessibility, right? And how can we make the game of volleyball more accessible to all communities? So great journey here, great story. You're going to love the conversation, and let's get to it. So Leah, the question that every athlete that comes on is, when you're younger as an athlete, what was like your biggest dream goal you want to achieve?
I kind of like started in small steps. So like my first goal was to play in college. I grew up around college athletics with my dad being a coach. So I was like, I want to be just like them. I wanted to play in college. I wanted to play at the D1 level like everyone does. And that was kind of like my big goal. And then once I got a little bit older and closer, and once I committed and I had that set, I was like, okay, I want to play professionally too. So it was like both of those things. That's what I was working towards. I kind of wanted to be in the national team gym too, but kind of that dream kind of shifted a little bit the older I got, but it was definitely to play professionally and to play in college, because that's all I've ever seen. And I was like, well, that's what I want to do too.
So when you have that, you know, like you want to go to college and you want to play, so how do you think that's going to happen? Like what was the thing that's going to take to get there?
Well, for volleyball, you have to play club volleyball. So we basically have two seasons. We play high school or our team ball, and then we have to play club. That's how you get seen. And so I started doing that about my eighth grade year of middle school. So that's when I started that, which is kind of like late now. We got girls that are 10 and 11 playing it now. So yeah, I was kind of like a late bloomer in that one, but like, I really didn't know anything about it. Like my parents are like football, and we knew about basketball and like those type of things. So like volleyball was like uncharted territory for us. So yeah, it's just kind of basically like club tournaments, coaches are there, they come and see you, but a lot of it was me reaching out. I made a list of every school and every conference. So I sat down and listened down every conference, because that's how like my brain works. And I was like, okay, let me think about these schools, first of all, where they're at and how good the volleyball program is. And then I kind of just like narrowed it down. So I had a group of schools in each conference that I was like, you know what, if I went there, I'd be totally cool. And then I started reaching out to them as well, because recruiting is a two-way street. Like if you aren't actively pursuing it, they're not going to actively pursue you, no matter how good or bad you may be. So yeah, that's kind of how it started. I mean, I had teams reaching out to me before I even knew what recruiting was. And I was like, we're not ready for this. So like, if you're expecting me to commit when I'm a freshman, you're kidding yourself. And so like, that's basically, I kind of just like kept, I don't even know how to describe it. Like I just kind of like level headed through recruiting. Like I'm a really like straight shooter. So like when teams and like schools weren't being like straightforward with me, I was like, bye, hit the door. Like I'm not playing that game with you. Like I know it too well. I've been watching it my entire life. Like I know when you're not the first pick at a school. And I was like, well, if I'm not your first pick, then I'm not coming there. So it was just kind of like, I kind of just like had a couple schools that I was obsessed with, and I rock and rolled with those ones. And then I ended up choosing Kentucky.
Sounds like you were very confident in the process.
Mm-hmm. Very much so. It was more like I knew what I could bring to the table. I knew who I was as a player and a person. And if someone wasn't going to be 100% full for me from the beginning, then I didn't want to be there. Like, I didn't want someone to be like, oh, we didn't get our first one, but I guess she will do. Like, I wanted to be like, no, we want you because we know who you are as a person and what you can be as a player.
So when you used to stay at school, reach out to you, what was like some of the things you would ask them, like to kind of get like, you know, those points to kind of find your, whatever you're looking for?
I mean, like the first like main question, like I asked is like, how do you see me fitting into your program? Like, what is your goal for me? Like, what is my role? And that kind of weeded out teams really quickly, because there's either schools that had the very quick, like, we want you to be this and this and this, or other schools were like, well, you know, like, we think that you'd be like a great part of the program. And I'm like, no, that's not what I asked. I asked, what do you see me doing in this program? And that's kind of how I figured out, like, okay, these are the teams that like see me being impactful. And these are the teams that are kind of like, we'll see what happens with her. We're not sure. And of course, a big thing for me is what position they wanted me to play, because at that time in high school, I was playing two positions. I was playing outside and middle. So I really needed to know what they wanted. And there was only one school, and of course it was the school I went to, that was like, we will play you in both positions if we have to. And that was like green flag. And of course, after they said that, all the other schools after them started saying that too. So I was like, okay, like, who's being really honest about it? But yeah, I asked them like that type of question and like what their goals were as a program. Cause you know, like some programs are just trying to like build up, get higher in their conference standings. Some are trying to get farther in NCAA tournament. And some are trying to be repeat champions. And so like knowing what their goals were, if that aligned with my goals, because going through the process, my big thing was I wanted to change a program. I didn't want to be a part of a program that was still building, that still had a lot of work to do. And I didn't want to be a part of a program that had already done everything. Because I feel like if I was a part of either one of those, you can get lost in it. Like I can go through 4 years and just be like, oh, she was just another player that went through it. I wanted to go to a program. And when I leave, when my class leave, that program is completely different than when I got there. And so that was a big thing for me too. Cause if like, they're still trying to work on the building blocks, if they're at the bottom of the standings, I was like, what? There's not but so much one person can do. So I wanted to be on a team that was like right there on the cusp of doing something great. They just need a little bit extra.
Man, so it sounds like if you were a coach, if you weren't on your A game, you were just off the list.
Yeah, basically I had, it was hard because like my first visit was to Kentucky, and Kentucky was on it, like offered me on my first visit, was like, knew exactly what they wanted. And the crazy thing about that is when I first moved here, they did not want to recruit me. And so like for it to go from that, from not wanting to recruit me to like offering me on my first visit in like a span of 6 months was like wild. So every school that I went to or talked to after that, I was comparing to Kentucky because they were straightforward. They told me exactly what they wanted and what they needed, and they didn't mess around. And so I was expecting that from every other school because I was in love with them, but I was like, you know, like it's only the first visit. Like, let me give some other schools some chances. I went on one other visit and I had the complete opposite experience. I knew I wasn't their first choice. They didn't even show me the locker room. It was like, there were just so many things that happened on the visit that I was like, we're not doing this. And so after that, I was just afraid. I was afraid to go on any other visits. I was afraid to talk to any other school because I was like, I'm not going to let anyone else make me feel how that school made me feel after that. And so I kind of just like shut it down, wouldn't talk to anyone because I was like, how do I know you're being truthful? And like some schools were like, we will offer you as soon as you get on campus, like, just please come visit. And I was like, no, I was just like too obsessed with Kentucky. And so then what did I do at the end of the summer? Committed to Kentucky. And I was happy and fine with that.
And what year did you commit?
I committed to Kentucky going into my junior year. So that would have been 2015.
Good.
Yeah. So they offered me in February. I committed in August.
So you were like, you know what? I'm going to be a Wildcat.
Yeah. I was like, you know what? No other place is going to compare. And they have exactly what I'm looking for. So why not? And of course, like my dream school, like the school, like I obsessed over, like as I was like a kid, 2 days before I was planning on committing to Kentucky, they were like, all up on my phone. I was like, oh my God, like, what do I do? What do I do? But then they said the best words. They said, you have to come to camp before we can offer you. And I was like, nope, I'm going to Kentucky. I was like, Kentucky. I was like, you all, the team had been watching me for such a long time. And I was like, what else do you need to see? They were at every tournament. They sat and watched every single game that I played at. And I was like, what else do you need to see? And so that comment right there, I was like, nope, if you have to still come, I have to still fly all the way to you just for you to be sure, nope. I was like, Kentucky's the place for me, because they didn't have to. They saw me one or two times and were like, yep, that's it.
She's the girl. She's the girl.
Yeah.
What's your coach name that recruited you? If we can kind of give her a shout out or him a shout out.
Craig Skinner. Craig Skinner, Lindsey Gray Walton, Anders Nelson. All the three of them were recruiting me because it's kind of easy in Kentucky. I'm here. So they just kind of like rotated it like one. But Lindsey was the main person that I talked to, and I still talk to her all the time. But I love this coaching staff, and they were truly great. And my recruiting experience with them was amazing.
I can tell, like, whoever's here maybe Kentucky fans after this, you know?
We need more, so I'm all for it.
So you going into this, you were like, I want to leave a legacy.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
I don't want to just be another player. I want to be a part of building a culture, a team, a foundation for the lead, the future.
Yes, for sure.
Okay, so now going into that freshman year at Kentucky, what were your expectations?
To play. That's all I wanted to do. I didn't care if I was in for one rotation or six rotations. I just wanted to start and I wanted to play. And I started off with that. I was like, hey, goal one through preseason is to start. I want to be the starting outside. I just want to play. And then after that, if I play three rotations or if I play all the way around, like, we can move into that. But I just wanted to start. And so did that. Started. So I was like, okay, I kind of, at first I only played front row. And so like my next goal was like, okay, let's see if I can like serve a little or just like get into that. And so then I started playing six rotations and I was like, okay, like then we can like rock and roll. And then I was like, okay, like, let's think outside of, I guess, like playing, like what are like my goals? And like, of course we wanted to win a championship. That's everyone's goal. But like, I wanted to be like all freshman team or like all SEC or like all American, like honorable mention, all American. Those were like my things. So that I knew that if I played to that level, we would win a lot of games. Okay. And so that was like my mentality. It was like, if I'm shooting to be one of the best in the conference or be one of the best in the country, then I have to hold myself to a certain level of playing every time I step on the court. And if I'm holding myself to such a high level, that will help everyone around me. So that's kind of like how I went through the things, and I got a lot more than I was expecting, which I was like, great. And everybody was like, weren't you expecting that? And I was like, no.
So it's kind of a process, right? So you have these goals. So what habits did you have to kind of put in place for yourself, especially as a freshman, to achieve those goals?
I kind of had to slow myself down because I'm like, I want this to happen. I want it to happen now. And I had to realize that, like, first of all, a freshman in college and a freshman in high school are two very different things, life-wise and volleyball-wise. And so I needed to just like not think so much, which I really wasn't at that time. At that time, I was like, life, okay. Like, I'm in college and I'm playing volleyball. Like, this is everything I could ever want. So like, I didn't feel any stress like as a freshman, like I did in high school. So all 4 years of high school, I felt the stress or the responsibility to carry the entire team or carry my position group. I always had that stress from high school and club to feel like I had to do everything. Now, was that pressure I probably put on myself more than I needed to? Absolutely. But like, that mentality made me play my best, because I felt like that if I didn't play my best, we were probably going to lose a game. And I didn't ever want that to happen. Now, that's probably unwanted stress that I didn't need, but I ended up playing my best. So it worked. So going back into being a freshman and being around women who had already done this at least one time, there's some stress off of me, because I was literally the youngest person on the court. Majority of the people playing were sophomores and juniors or juniors and seniors. So they had already been through this. And so like, me making a mistake or me having a mental lapse because this is just new wasn't as big of a deal, because I knew I had other people to pick up on. So it kind of made the transition easy and easier for me to hit my goals, because I didn't feel stressed to be everything.
I like that you said, you know, you achieved more than you thought that was going to happen. So what do you mean by that?
Like award wise, like I did a lot more than I thought. Like I in high school and club was very underlooked. So like I was just like the athlete, which we can get into because it's a very frustrating thing for me. But I was just an athlete that could jump really high and was like just super athletic. So like no one really paid attention to me. Like I got recognition in high school, but also high school volleyball in Lexington was like, it's good, but it's not the best. So like, if you did something like pretty good, you end up being on a team on all city or all state or something like that. So, but even through that, like still, I never got any like national recognition. I mean, like I was like number 7 in my recruiting class, but like that only happened because we just happened to beat the number 1 team in the country. Like if that didn't happen, I guarantee I wouldn't have been put that high up. And so like just things like that, like I got recognition, but like it wasn't like respect. It wasn't like a respectful recognition. That's what I didn't feel like it was. I didn't feel like it was because of my skill as a volleyball player. It was because I jumped so high and I was so athletic that like that's why she's able to do these things, not because she actually can play volleyball. So like to get to college and then win all the awards that I did, I felt like I was actually getting recognition for what I can do as a volleyball player, not me as an athlete.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay. So you wanted to be known for your skill set, you mm-hmm. know, and be able to what you can do as a technical player, just because you have the ability to do some more athletic things that people couldn't do.
Yeah. Because, you know, with Black athletes, it's a very small adjective pool for us for some reason, no matter what we do. And so it was just always, she's really raw. She has so much potential. And I was like, I haven't been playing volleyball for that long, but I'm not that raw. I can learn a couple of things, but I know what I'm doing. And I'm like, me being athletic is not an indicator of me being able to do the things that I do. Cause that's not just that. And me jumping high, I know white people, Black people, Hispanic people that can jump high. So like that, those things just very much aggravated me, and they aggravated me through my whole career because that's all I was said to be. It was never that I was like a great volleyball player. It was, she's super athletic and she can jump really high. And I'm like, but there's more to me than that.
So did that drive you every day?
Every single day, especially playing in a sport that's predominantly white. It's just like, for some reason, and I mean, that's with every sport that you play, that for some reason, I'm only labeled these certain things. And literally till my senior year was the first time that I ever watched a game and someone said I had a high volleyball IQ. Like that I knew the game and that the things that I was doing were smart and methodical. And I was thinking about the court and where to put the ball. Like to get to like what, 23 years old after playing volleyball since I was about 9 or 10, that's the first time that I hear that I am smart when it comes to volleyball. It's extremely frustrating.
Yeah.
Cause but I know what I'm doing. Yeah. Like maybe my freshman and my sophomore year of high school, like I just was kind of gangly. I was long and I just had a bunch of limbs and I didn't know how to use them. And I kind of didn't know how to control my body, but that comes with time. But like once I started clearly showing that I knew how to play volleyball, I feel like the conversation should have changed and it didn't. And it still hasn't, because I have teammates now that I watch broadcast of, and it's still the same thing. It's, oh, she jumps really high. Her arms are so long that they reach over the net. No, how about she has really good blocking technique, and that's why she's able to do the things that she does, not because she can jump really high. Can she jump really high? Out of the world. But it's more than that. It's not just that. And so it's every day I'm trying to work to change that stigma, especially around Black volleyball players, because for some reason that's all we hear.
That's interesting. Like I'm still learning volleyball, so it's interesting to hear that perspective. And so for you, right? If you were to describe your game, how would you describe your skill set as a volleyball player?
I mean, I think the first word that comes to my mind is like powerful, because that is something that I love about myself is how powerful my arm really is and how strong it is. And I think also that I am smart. Like, do I love to just go up there and rip away? Absolutely. 90% of the time, that's exactly what I'm doing. But I'm also smart enough that I can see the court, and I'm experienced enough, and I have a high volleyball IQ. I can see the court. I know where to put the ball. Now, does the ball always go where you want it to? No, trust me, it doesn't. But I'm smart enough, and I've been playing long enough that I know what I'm doing. And like, that's frustrating, because I'm powerful and I have a high volleyball IQ and I am extremely confident, but also very calm on the court. And so those are things that I want to be known for. I had a calm confidence that even though I would go up there and rip away balls, you would never see me look scared or anxiety ridden on the court. That's probably the calmest I will ever be, is on the volleyball court. And so like, those are things that I wanted to be described as, that I was extremely confident but calm, a very powerful but smart hitter. And those words were sometimes used. Powerful always gets used. I have a heavy arm, that you always will hear that, but like the rest of it never comes up.
Well, we will for sure label this episode calm confidence.
I like that.
I do too. That it's like a, it has a good vibe to it. You know?
It does. I was really struggling when I saw that. I was like, I have not one title. Couldn't tell you.
And well, you got it right now for sure. So going on that, I mean, like, I'm sure there's a lot of, you know, young, you know, black girls that are playing volleyball and probably other sports too that are getting those type of adjectives, right? And they're not being described about, you know, their ability to play the game, but just about their attributes. So how do you think those words affect those athletes, you know, just like growing up and just loving the sport and just, you know, being able to develop?
I think it's hard, especially I'm going to be volleyball specific in our sport. There's a lot of bias. And I've talked about this before, how the black athletes are automatically put as hitters. We're the ones swinging at the ball and jumping a bunch. We're always put in the front row. You have a couple black setters and you have a couple black liberos, but I could tell you the majority of black women who play volleyball are hitters. And so first working through that like, just because I'm tall and black does not automatically mean I have to hit. And specifically, they love putting us at middle blocker because that's the agile athletic position. You're moving back and forth, you're jumping a lot, because that's what I was put as. Because it's so funny to look back now that like I was automatically labeled as a middle, and there are girls in college that I was always around, they were like, you're gonna play outside, just promise us you're gonna play outside, like we know you're going to do it, like you think you're gonna be a middle, but they're going to turn you into an outside. And that's exactly what they did. But I played middle literally till I stepped foot on my college campus. And so like, just first of all, working on that bias of like, and it's like unconscious, like most things are. You're not thinking, oh, she's black, and because she's black and she can jump, she has to play in middle. But that's where we've always been put, from Olympic teams, national teams, to club and college teams. We're always, the majority of them are middles. They are. And I mean, it's getting a little bit diverse, but I mean, even the girls that I played with, majority of the black players were middles, or they played front row. So working through that first and having the confidence to be like, no, like if a coach tries to put you as a hitter, but you really, really want to learn how to set, you need to be like, no, I want to learn how to set. Like, I feel like I'm way more confident in setting or passing and playing back row than I am hitting. And I think like that's the first thing we got to work on, because like, you don't automatically have to be a hitter because you can jump. Like that, if that's not what somebody wants to do, like, I mean, I even set a little bit because I enjoyed it. I liked doing it, but I always got put back as a hitter. So working through that bias first of, hey, just because she's black does not mean she has to be a hitter. And then second, making sure we have representation in ways, like making sure that they can look at national teams or the Olympic teams and there are black women on those teams, that they look at college teams and they can see the diversity. Like my pro league, the amount of diversity in my pro league is just amazing. And knowing that there are so many black women that girls can watch our league and see and be like, I want to be like them. Because there were plenty growing up for me, but I feel like there wasn't enough. not the way that you see football and basketball are predominantly black sports, like football, basketball, track and field. You saw a ton of them. So you were like, that's where I'm going to gravitate to. It's hard not to. It's not like, I don't want to play that sport. It's just like, I don't, no one looks like me that plays that sport. So like, why would I want to do that? And especially in like high school, like you don't see many black tennis or golf or gymnast or things like that. So like, you're not going to gravitate towards something that you don't see. And also making it more accessible. Volleyball is an expensive sport, a very expensive sport. And so football and basketball don't cater to that need of it not being expensive. AAU basketball is nowhere near as expensive as volleyball, nowhere as close as time consuming as volleyball. And it's just like, it's just not the same. And so when you have low income areas, they're not going to gravitate to a sport that you're paying thousands and thousands of dollars for. I mean, I know people who have paid their college tuition in club volleyball, and like making it more accessible to all groups of people. Cause that's the issue. You have predominantly white sports. Why are they predominantly white? Cause they're so expensive, and you have areas and parts of cities or parts of the country that lost the black population. Low income. They can't pay for those sports. So if they can't pay for them, they're not going to do them. Yeah. So making it more accessible, because like, even in my own club, there wasn't that many of us. And Lexington isn't like our club wasn't crazy expensive, but it was still expensive enough that it wasn't an option to everyone. So like those three things, bias, the accessibility, like just those things just make such a difference. And especially for our sport, it makes such a difference. The difference between it being accessible is the difference between you having a more diverse group of people wanting to play it. I mean, it's the number one growing sport in high school for women's sports right now. So it's getting there, but in terms of getting to college route is still extremely difficult.
I love this conversation. It's making me think about, you know, how can we at Nine Point do more to, you know, be a part of the change, right? Because I'm learning myself from hearing conversations like this with you, that has me thinking like, okay, what can we do more to showcase more black athletes, you know, on the women and the men's side, right? Yep. Because I'm sure like you don't see a lot of black men playing volleyball, right? Because no. we gravitate towards, we see football, we see, like you said earlier, football, basketball, and track. That's because we're the athletes, right? Because that's what we gravitate towards. So it's interesting. That's got me thinking. It's 6 a.m. in the morning. Got me thinking. All right.
Yeah.
So to go back to your journey, you know, so, you know, you achieved great things your freshman year. So how did you think, okay, how do I, you know, keep going up your sophomore, junior, and senior year?
So the big thing for Kentucky was we were so close. So my freshman year, we last game of the regular season, we lost to a team that we've lost to multiple times to win an SEC championship. So it was another, not failed season, but it was another, like, we were so close and we didn't get it. So going into my sophomore year, whole team, that's all we talked about. That's all we think about. We were like, we are done with being too close. We are done with losing the one game that would change the rest of the landscape. And so like, that was our goal. So going into my sophomore year, guns were blazing. Like, team was on fire from the second we lost in the tournament to first day of preseason. And I mean, even through that, and that was our goal. And that was my goal. And my goal was like, well, what can I do better than I did last year? How can I go past? Cause at that point I had won all the awards I'd always thought I could win. And so then I was like, well, there's another step to this. There are like more levels. Like, I was a third team. How can I be first team? And if I'm a first team All-American, like, what's that going to do for my team? And if I'm playing to that level, what's that going to do for them? If I'm aiming to be SEC Player of the Year, if I'm playing at that level, that's going to help my team achieve that championship goal that we wanted. And that was kind of the mentality every time, because we just wanted to get one step closer. We wanted to get the SEC championship. We wanted to get farther in the tournament. And so everything that we did and everything that I did was like, what can my goal, what can my aspirations be for myself that will then impact the team? Because me, I'm very team oriented. I'm very like, what can I do to help? Not what can I do for myself? And I feel like sometimes that can get a little distorted when you're trying to think of goals for yourself. You're trying to think of like, okay, well, what are my goals? But like, I was more like, okay, like if I do this, then I get this team goal. So it was kind of like that. That's always been my mentality, was like, okay, if I hold myself to this standard of what I want, that in turn helps the team, because then I'm playing at a high level every time I step foot on the court. Cause that's anytime someone sees me, they're going off of that game, like that game, because the coaches are part of the boards of directors that choose these people. And so I'm like, well, if I step out and I play really well in front of all these people in the public, that's going to help me then achieve the awards that I want, but then also help my team win the game. So that's kind of always been my mentality. And then like every year I was a stepping stone. So my sophomore year, we made it to the Elite Eight. So in my mind for junior year, I was like Final Four, like that's the next stepping stone. We won a championship finally my sophomore year. So I was like, okay, another championship. So every year I was building on what we didn't get from the last year and how I could push myself to get to that point the year after.
Yo, this calm confidence is off the chart.
I'm not calm in real life. So it's just like wild that I'm calm when it comes to volleyball.
So I'm curious, what year were you captain?
We didn't have captains.
Really? Because you would have been captain probably your freshman year, maybe.
We did not have captains. So like we had, of course, every year you had like the seniors would do the ones would do like coin toss and things like that. So that was always, but our coach really believed that a leader could come from any class.
Yeah.
Like you had like your main people, like there were people every year that were like, you could tell were like kind of the leaders that the coaches. And I mean, like I, from probably my sophomore year up, they put me in some type of leadership role or expected me to hold the team to some type of standard, but we never had like a true, like, these are your captains. It was like a freshman could do something to lead this team, which is very true because I had moments in my freshman year when I led the team. And there were moments that freshmen after me came in and led the team. I mean, my sophomore year, our setter was a freshman. She's literally leading the team. She's the one that touches the ball the most out of anyone. And so like he believed that leaders come in all shapes and sizes and forms and positions. So someone on the bench that's not playing that much can be just as much as a leader as someone on the court. So that we never really had true captains. We had people, you know, on the team, you have people that you know are like, they gravitate towards being the leaders and everybody looks towards them, but like there was no assigned title to them.
AKA you.
I think maybe I didn't step into that role fully until I was an upperclassman, because the senior class I had my sophomore year was, they didn't need any help. They were very driven. They led and they took it and we followed them easily. So it was more definitely my junior and senior year. Like I had a role, but my role was more like do your job, yeah, kind of role, like play volleyball. Like you can lead us through volleyball. Let's do that. It wasn't more, I didn't have very much of a vocal voice until more upperclassmen year, because I didn't feel like that was necessary from me because we had the people who could do it.
And I think that's kind of a good thing too, because I think leadership is like kind of being the loudest one in the room. I think mm-hmm. sometimes just like our actions can be the strongest, you know, thing that we can do to show that we're a true leader. You know, people can follow that way by you getting up and grinding every day, not backing down. From like they probably followed you for that.
I mean, I'm vocal. I was vocal, but I definitely was more like, I'm going to go play volleyball. Y'all going to follow me with that? Yeah. Okay. Let's do that then. That's kind of my thing. And I'm okay with that. That's kind of always been my thing. I have my moments. Yeah. I will say I have my vocal moments where I will rip into everyone. But most of the time I was like, I'm going to go get a kill. And by me getting a kill, it's going to get all you fired up. And then we're going to go.
I'm gonna watch some of your highlights now. I'm curious to kind of watch, kind of just see the game and kind of match it to what you're saying here.
For sure. Yeah, my personality on the court is one of a kind, to say the least. It's very funny when people watch me and they like watch me play, and then they see me off the court and they're like, "Oh, you on the court? That's a interesting person." I'm like, it's intense.
There's a switch, right?
Yeah, I know, it's a very quick switch. I mean, but that was like anytime we did something competitive, even in practice, switch flipped. I'm coming at your neck.
So it's game day. What's your go-to warm-up song?
We don't have just one song. It's a whole playlist of the most aggressive music from all of my favorite artists. So lots of Drake, lots of Future, lots of Young Thug and Gunna and Lil Baby. Just that rotation. Waka Flocka, always. That's like a Kentucky staple. Like if you don't play Waka Flocka at least one time, like you can't play a sport at Kentucky.
Hard to paint. Just come on in.
Literally. It's wild. We have like, our school has like this history with Waka Flocka. He even came to a game like that, always was just played. It's a really, we listen to some really aggressive music in the locker room. Like if you walked in there, you'd be like, is this a football team? Like, no, but it's 15 girls.
You got Gunner, Young Thug, y'all full gangsters over there.
Oh, we were playing some songs and we were just like, sometimes like even the recruits would be like, y'all are, this is aggressive. Like, but we were like, that's us. Like it was just really like, that's how it was like weird. Even like the calmest person on the team, like you play that, a wrap. It's a wrap.
Even coaches get into it.
Not really. I feel like sometimes they would stand outside of the locker room, like before, like they come in for a meeting and they'd be like, y'all were playing some interesting music. And we were just kind of like, well, yeah. I mean, there were sometimes like after we like won a championship, there's like a song that like every single Grove Street Party by Waka Flocka is like Kentucky anthem. So like everyone, after you won, everyone would play that song. Football, basketball, volleyball, everybody loved that song. Like that, if you play that song in a stadium of 60,000 people, that place goes nuts. It goes nuts. Like that's our song. Like that's the Kentucky song. So like, of course, all of our coaches would always like dance with us when we played that after we like won a big game. But yeah, majority of the time they were like, y'all are being really aggressive. And we're like,
It worked.
Some Yang twins, team goes nuts.
Y'all going nuts for sure.
It's wild. I mean, it's a good time though. That's what you need.
Yeah.
Our team thrived off of the aggressiveness. So
you need the vibes.
Yeah, it was a vibe.
So in a journey, you know, you're achieving all these things. At what point did you start thinking about like the next chapter, right? Like what's going to be next after, you know, Kentucky days are over?
I really didn't think about it, to be completely honest. I guess I got glimpses of it because almost every summer that I played at Kentucky, I went overseas. And I played with the U.S. collegiate team, or I played with the junior national team. So like my first year, I went to Mexico. Second year, I went to Europe. And third year, Kentucky took us to Brazil. So every time I went and did that, I got to see volleyball from a worldly perspective. It definitely was like in the back of my mind, because those experiences kind of you got used to. Like I was in Mexico for a month, like that, getting used to that, being in a culture that I don't know, eating food that I don't know, and being around people that do not speak English, like that, you're getting slow glimpses of what the professional life would be, because professional volleyball is not a thing in the States. I mean, I've been a part of a league that just started 2 years ago trying to get professional volleyball, but like majority of my friends, majority of people are not in America, because for some reason, pro volleyball is a big thing in every single country but America.
It's wild too, because some of the best athletes, right, are in the U.S. and then to go to get play.
Yeah. And it's very frustrating, and they've tried before, and that was a long time ago, like back 80s and 90s. So I'm hoping that with what we have now with social media and things like that, it's helping. And I mean, my league is gaining momentum, and that's really exciting, but like, it's just not, it's like WNBA, like we are baby steps. And I mean, they've taken almost 20, 25 years to get to where they are, and they're still struggling to get what they deserve. And so I know for our sport, even though we get so many people watch, I mean, millions of people are watching tournaments, and arenas are filled, and like there are fans everywhere. Like I just went on vacation and someone was talking about college volleyball with me, like just like something like that. Like people came up and like, oh my God, you play volleyball. Do you know this person and this person? And like, just like things like that. So like, I know people will watch it if you put it on, but you can't put it on like Fox Sports 2, or you can't put it on ESPN Plus where someone has to have a subscription or an extra package or something like that. But it was in my mind, pro volleyball was in my mind, but I was so consumed with Kentucky that like you couldn't get my eyes anywhere else. And then of course, as I'm graduating, COVID happened. So that put a whole pause on my ideas too, because I was like, I haven't played volleyball since December. It's March. I have an agent. I'm looking at teams and going to look at where I want to play. But at the same time, we have this whole illness right now that we have no clue what's going on with. Half of Europe is shut down. Can't come back to America. Do I really want to go and pursue this like right now? So like, it was a lot. It was a lot. I really didn't think about it. And then of course, when I was ready to think about it, the whole world was going nuts. And I was like, yeah, no, scratch that. We're not doing that right now.
And luckily AU is right on the corner.
Yes. And luckily that same summer, AU was like, hey, you want to sit on a call and like, listen to this? And I was like, oh, this is perfect. This is exactly what I need. Only playing volleyball for 6 weeks. Get to stay in America. Because at that point, I'd also found out that I had a torn labrum. So I was really trying to like, that's been the struggle of my pro career. So we talked about my college struggles. Pro struggles is dealing with the fact that I have a torn shoulder and I didn't get it fixed and don't plan on getting it fixed anytime soon. And trying to combat a whole new mental state was rough. It was rough. Very rough, but AU came at the perfect time for me.
So kind of going on those two fold, right? So on the injury, like how did, so what's your framework? Cause you seem like you're very driven, like you want to, you know, go get it. So how do you kind of, I guess, maybe slow yourself down a little bit to handle that going on?
It was a tearful process, to say the least, because everything that I had known before as a volleyball player, like my swinging and my arm and my power and being known for she only hits 100% 90% of the time. So like there was no slowing down the shot or hitting 50%. I was go, go, go. And I had to relearn how to swing. And that was a process of going to rehab, and she literally said, you can only swing at 30%. Well, I don't, what is 30%? Like, what is that? Like I could only hit at 30% and I could only hit 8 times every 2 days. Like my whole rehab process was wild. I spent almost 4 or 5 months literally rebuilding how to swing again and knowing how to go from 100 to 30, to 40, to 50, and then 60 and 70. And then learning how to do that, it was extremely difficult for my mental state, because every time I went up to swing and I saw the ball, I was like, oh, I had to swing away. And like, I got yelled at, I mean, so many times, that's not 30%. That's like 70. And I was like, but I don't even know what my 70 is. And they're like, you're swinging too hard. And I'm like, okay. Like, just like going through all of that. And like, I went almost 8 months with not seven, 8 months of not being able to swing, period. Not, I mean, it was like April to October almost, that I could not swing, could not touch a volleyball, could not do anything above my head. And that was difficult because I'm like, well, I'm an athlete. I have to play. Like, I have to keep all this stuff. And like, I had to like slow down and literally sit here and learn how to like use muscles in my shoulder that I didn't even know existed. Rebuild muscle, learn how to move again, and all these things that like I just wasn't planning on doing coming out of college. Cause like I never had pain. I mean, not in my arm. Like it was always like I had a messed up knee. I sprained my ankle a couple of times. I had back issues, but like my shoulder was straight. Cause I mean, if we're being honest, I've taken a lot of swings, like thousands of swings. I've taken at least maybe 1,200 swings a season since I was 15 years old, probably even more than that. And just like, I just always I was like, my arm's not going to fall off. I mean, everybody else knew my arm was going to fall off, but like, I was naive to the fact. So actually being injured with something that stopped me from playing volleyball is what got me. Cause all my other injuries, sprained ankle, played through those, my knee taped it up, called it a day. My back took pain meds. So like I was able to play through all these injuries and I took pride in pain through my injuries. And I took pride in playing through pain because it showed how good of a leader I was. And then when this happened, I was like, wait a second, why did I take pride in playing through pain? Like, why did I take pride in playing through being injured? Well, like from a grand scheme of things, like you see like NBA players and NFL players, like talk about, oh, I played with a torn ACL. I played with a broken arm or a broken leg or a broken ankle. And like, people are like, oh my God, you're so tough. And then like, when I like now looking back at it, I was like, that's why do we praise that? Why do we glorify playing through your body being injured? Why do we glorify playing when you're sick? Like, even if you have the MJ flu game, like, why do we praise that? And I'm like, because it kind of changed my perspective on it. I was like, I'm in excruciating pain. What joy, what am I bringing to my teammates, to this game by not being at 100%? Like, it's not, it should be frowned upon. Like, we shouldn't be forcing, like, we already force our bodies to ends that they were never supposed to go to, or I don't think they're supposed to go to, because my shoulders, both shoulders are torn, probably got tears in my hips and tears in my knees. Like, things that like you just wouldn't get being a regular person, not an athlete. So why do we glorify being able to play through pushing our body to limits they're not supposed to be? So like through my shoulder, I was like, that was the first time in over 15 years of playing volleyball that I chose myself, that I said, I'm going to put Leah first. I'm not going to put my league, my team, my coaches. I'm not going to put them before me. I'm going to put myself first. And I'm actually going to take the time to heal and do what's best for me for once. Cause I, like I said, I'm team oriented. So I was like, I'm going to do whatever for the team. And now I was like, I'm gonna do whatever for Leah because I need it.
It's always cool for me doing interviews, kind of going to just like kind of open eye, just to see where things go conversation wise, and what the way our conversation is going, and how much insight you are providing is top notch. So I don't know how else to say, like just the depth in the conversation. So just like, I think someone's gonna hear this and they're gonna have a different perspective on volleyball and how they approach probably their own journey, because that's so many of us, we play through injury because it's glorified, like you were saying, you know, like if you like it's like the athlete culture, the athlete mantra, you know, like rough some dirt on it. And it's like in the day, if you're, it's kind of like what do you gain from it sometimes?
Lifelong issues. Issues. I mean, ankles, my feet, I have awful, awful issues with my ankles because of playing through sprained ankles, and my knees give out on me sometimes. And like, now I have to do more work to keep those things together because I didn't give my body enough time to fix itself.
Yeah.
So yeah, no, I hate that. I hate when people glorify injuries or playing through things like that. And like, people like LeBron get ridiculed for not playing for 3 months because he has a sprained ankle. I'm like, also like, this dude's pushing like 40. Like, let's, we can't be asking him to do those things. And we shouldn't be asking 15 through 18 year olds to do those things for the sake of winning a game. Because like at the end of the day, like one day we're not going to be playing this sport anymore. Whether that's next year or 10 years from now, like I, this is what went through my mind, my shoulders. Like I, like if I have children, I want to be able to move and do things. Like I want to be able to throw a ball to my dog, which I wasn't able to do for the longest time. Like I want to be able to grab a glass from the top shelf or sleep on the right side of my body. Like little things like that, that like when I'm not playing volleyball, I need to be able to move my body without being in pain. And oh my God, my computer's trying to restart. I was like, no, don't do that. Like just being able to move my body in normal circumstances was very much like hindsight. Cause I was like, I need to be able to live outside of volleyball. And if I can't do that, then I shouldn't be pushing myself to these extremes still in volleyball. Like I'm not in college anymore. I don't have the resources. I mean, I can, but I don't have the things like that I used to. It's a lot on me. Like even my league, like the treatment that I need, like I have to be able to say, I need this, or I need to do extra work before practice to make sure that I'm warm enough for practice. Like it's not someone else. No one else is telling me what to do. No one's telling me what time I have to be at practice so I can warm up. No one's telling me that I have to come to treatment. No one's telling me that I have to go to rehab. Like no one's telling me that. It is me, myself. And so if I had that accountability for myself maybe earlier and did a lot of those things before without someone telling me, I think I might be in a different spot or a better place. Or if I put forth that extra effort of icing a little bit more or telling someone like, yo, I'm in pain. I can't do this today. Or I just need to take a little bit off today, that I might be in a different spot. Cause I feel like advocating for yourself as an athlete needs to start when you're becoming an athlete. Cause if it doesn't, then you're never going to do it. And then when you get to the point where you need to start advocating for yourself, you're going to be afraid to, because you're afraid you're going to disappoint someone, which is what I dealt with. I felt like I was disappointing someone by not pushing through the pain, because that's always what I did. I felt like I was letting someone down by not playing because I was in so much pain, or ending practice earlier for myself, being like, hey, I can't swing anymore. Like I thought I was letting someone down when in fact I wasn't. I was taking care of myself, because at the end of the day, my teammates were like, can you play? We need you to play. We don't need you to practice. We need you to be able to play because we need to win games, because that's what matters. And so getting into a different mindset of like, I need to take care of myself, because if I don't take care of myself, I can't help my team. When majority of my life, I had been like, team, what do I need to do to help my team? Instead of being like, no, what do I need to do to make sure I'm okay enough to help my team? Where do I need to be mentally, physically, emotionally to make sure that I am in the capacity to help my team? And having that mindset change of like, okay, what does Leah need? Because Leah needs to be taken care of before Leah can take care of other people. And that's still something really hard for me, saying no, or being like, nope, I can't do that today. Like, I'm sorry. Like, I just need rest. Or telling myself, like, I don't have to work out 6 days a week, every week. Like, some days it's okay to take a day off or take 2 days off when I'm not feeling good. That doesn't make me any less of an athlete. Doesn't make me any less dedicated. I have to take care of myself.
Mic drop. And so if you were to guess, so to take that mindset shift, right, and say, you know, if you had to go back in time, I guess, to kind of give like one word of advice to your younger self, would that be it?
Think about myself for once. Yeah. I said that in an interview last year. It was the first time that I've ever thought about myself. I think sometimes it's frowned upon to be selfish. And it can't, in circumstances like this, you can't be afraid to be selfish. And I wish that someone would have told me that I didn't have to swing hard every time I touched the ball.
You didn't have to be the athlete every play.
Yeah, I didn't have to be the big arm, the rally killer, I didn't have to be the person to finish everything. And but you can still hold yourself to a high expectation with limits. Like maybe I could have taken a little bit off. And the crazy thing is I was modified in practice and I didn't even know it. I found that out after that my coach wanted me to take even more swings than I did. And they wanted me to do even more than I was already doing. And to know that that was already a fight being fought for me was like nice. But it's the fact that even with those modifications, I was still taking a bunch of swings. But I mean, I'm okay with that. That became my job. That's what I'm known for. And I'm okay with that. But I wish I would have known, like in practice situations, hey, like maybe like I don't have to swing hard every time. Like I can win with a shot. And just like that mindset, like kind of like a immature mindset of from the beginning, everybody's always told me you jump high and you hit hard. And so I felt like I had to do that every single time or I wasn't being who I was supposed to be. So I wish I could tell myself that like, hey, if you want a long career, you got to pace yourself, dude. You really need to pace yourself. And I would have taken way more breaks in between playing volleyball, like high school and club. I had like a week off or two between that, taking more breaks and giving myself proper rest, but also knowing how to do shoulder prehab and rehab and knowing how to properly warm myself up. So then I'm not extenuating myself outside of what I need to do because I just wasn't ready to do what I needed.
And so I'm still learning volleyball. And so for me hearing you kind of middle blockers, I'm thinking like football and like running backs and kind of the one that's always getting the ball, the one that has to go. There's no, you don't want to just run the ball and just stop. You want you to go, you know, hard every play. So,
like middles are like that. And the crazy thing is they're like the opposite of a running back. It's like a wide receiver almost. They line up and they just go and go and go every single time. And half of the time, majority of the time, they don't even get the ball. Most of the time, middles are decoys a lot because if someone's focused on the middle, it leaves everybody else open. And for that job, I would never want that job ever again. It is extremely difficult the higher level you get. And I give all the praise to middles because they do so much work. And sometimes I feel like they are not praised enough and not given enough recognition from like a volleyball standpoint and just like an award standpoint. I don't feel like they win enough awards. I don't feel like they are put high enough on awards like first teams and things like that. And I feel like that's a lot of positions in volleyball. The outsides and the setters get all the praise and then like the rest kind of don't because they're not touching the ball as often. But middles, my God, they're just running around in circles the entire time. And I can't.
Shout out to the middles out there.
Yeah, shout out to all the middles because I'm so happy that stopped in high school because I've watched my teammates kill themselves and I'm like, I don't want to do that. Mm-hmm. I have not one urge to do that. You're on the court for three rotations and you do a whole lot more work than I do in six. I don't want any part of that.
So this is what I'm thinking because I'm like a lost conversation right now. So I'm like, we got to find a way to collaborate more and kind of get your knowledge and kind of help. How can we do more? I mean, like, you got really got me thinking about this whole, you know, how can we, you know, grow the accessibility, you know, of volleyball, you know, especially like I'm from Dallas and I know like there's a lot of, you know, athletes in Dallas, right? And a lot of Black girls that probably can do all these things and they're always just like the basketball and track. And how can we kind of figure out how to showcase, you know, volleyball?
It's a stigma. It's a stigma. It's a stigma in the athletic community and it's a stigma in the Black community. And until you fix those, you'll never get it. Because just like even when I walk down the street and everybody assumes I play basketball and like I take offense to it. I take so much offense to it because I'm like, no, there are other options. Sometimes I say other things. Like sometimes I'll like throw out a tennis just to see people's face. Cause like, it's just stereotypes. I'm tall and I'm Black. I have to play basketball or a look of defeat. When I go to church and I told everybody for the first time that I play volleyball and they're like, oh, No one's more disappointed in me than old Black people when I tell them I don't play basketball. Like, they're just like, you play basketball? No, I play volleyball. And they're like, oh, okay.
Bless you, child. Bless you.
Yeah, like, they're like, oh, okay. And I'm like, oh, what's... Sometimes I say I don't play a sport at all, and that really throws everybody for a loop. Because it's just like, why do I have to play a sport? Just because I'm this tall or because I'm this color does not mean I have to play a sport. But I mean, when I can plug volleyball, I will absolutely do it. But sometimes it's really fun to mess with people. Because I'm not built like a normal person. I'm pretty big. So it's kind of hard for me not, if I'm this size and I don't play a sport, I'd be like, what are you eating? So, I mean, but yeah, it's a stigma in both communities until you change the landscape and you change the way that the people that you look at, because I mean, like, you go to like LeBron James, and those are the big names that you think of when you think of Black athletes, but they also have to be the people that are helping change the stigma in all these other sports. Because if that's all a kid ever sees is a Black athlete in basketball and football, that's what they're going to do. And if we're not putting these other sports, and like Simone Biles, like, I know how many new Black gymnasts are there? There can't be a lot, because gymnastics is just as expensive as volleyball, even more, not as accessible. And it's just like, when you see people's abilities and know that they could, they need to have all the options. They need to be able to do all the sports. They need to be able to go out for swimming. I did swimming. I enjoyed it immensely. And I was blessed to have the opportunity to go and try every sport until I found one that I loved. But not everybody's getting that option. And that's not fair. I wish there was more softball and baseball and golf and tennis and all these other sports where people could be so gifted if they were given the opportunities. But I feel like that's not even a sports issue. That could go into so many other fields. Don't get me started on that, because I'm a teacher too. You have resources, you have the availability, people are going to be doing things that you would never expect. But also, there are some people that don't want you to do all those things that you could do if you have those resources. So it's dealing with issues way bigger than just sports.
And I think of too, is like, maybe you just want to be an engineer. You don't want to be an athlete. Maybe you want to be in tech, or you want to be in marketing. You want to be a CEO one day. You want to be an athlete. Yeah. How do you have a conversation with people to, you know, if they're like, yeah, I may be 6'5", but you know, I want to code. You know, it's
I don't want to play a sport. And just because you are a size does not mean you have to play a sport. Because other side, like, what if I'm small and I want to play a sport? Like, my height, how I look, the color I am should not dictate what I have to do. Yeah. Do I happen to play a sport and I'm Black and I'm athletic and I can jump? Yeah. But like, it's because I love it.
Yeah.
And that's always what I've said. And this is what I will tell anyone else. If you don't love it, don't do it anymore. Because volleyball to me is not a career. Yeah. It is something that I love that I happen to get paid to do as well. Because when my love for volleyball leaves, I'm not going to force myself to do anymore to get a paycheck. I have a degree for that. And I love my degree as well. But don't do something you don't love just for a paycheck, because you will be miserable. And I know people who play volleyball because it's their career and they've lost the love of it. So it's like, I don't care how much. I could be making millions and millions of dollars, which I'm not, which we need to get to. But if I don't love what I'm doing, why am I going to continue doing it?
Yeah.
If I don't love volleyball anymore, why am I going to continue to push myself to do it?
I can talk with you all day about this. Like, we can go for hours. Yeah.
So. Oh, yeah. It's just like, how many professional athletes are still playing their sport because it makes them money?
And they don't know who they are outside of the game or outside of their sports.
Absolutely. And COVID helped me figure that out, because I figured out that I love children and teaching just as much as I do volleyball. So I've always been happy with doing both. During COVID, I taught. I taught fifth grade. I had my own classroom. I did all that. And volleyball came second to that. I left to go play volleyball, but I still came back to teaching. And this year, volleyball took heed over teaching. And I didn't teach as much as I did my first year. But I know that I love both of those things. I'd be happy doing both of those. And I feel like we all go to college, but how many of the athletes going pro finish college? Like, why aren't we pushing them to have a degree? And I know people say now it's a degree, but also at the same time, what are you going to do after? What if you don't make it past? What if you don't make it to your second contract? What if after your second contract, you don't make it to your third? What if you blow all your money in your first couple of years and you got nothing else left? And now you don't have a degree and not every school lets you come back and finish your degree. Now I know Kentucky lets you come back. And they take pride in that and letting people come back and finish their degree. But not every school is going to do that. Mm-hmm. And so then what are you going to do? You got to find an identity outside of volleyball. And that has been one of my strong suits, is that I am more than just a ball player. And I knew my limits. I wasn't going to stay in the gym for until all hours of the night doing the same thing over and over again. That's not me. I'm not one of those things. I am not like a big gym rat. I'm one of those people like, I'm going to get in here. I'm going to do my job. I'm going to do it to the best of my ability. But after that, I got to give myself a break.
You're efficient.
If that's what you want to call it. I'll say that because it's sometimes frowned upon to not want to be in the gym all the time and not wanting to be working on your craft all the time. But sometimes you need a break. And I feel like that's why I'm able to play a lot longer than some people will, because I'm not like them. Like I'm not going to run myself dry at volleyball and run it to the ground, because then you get sick of it real quickly and it becomes just like, oh, I don't want to do this anymore. Well, I'm in the gym all the time. I can't do it. And I never feel that. I'm like, oh, I get to play volleyball today. Yay.
And then
great. Yeah.
You throw the ball a little bit. So Leah, clear question for you. So what's next for you? You know, we talked about, you know, about the mindset shift. So what's next as you progress, you know, to the end of this year and going to the next?
I'm going to try to play for as long as my body allows me and how long mentally I want to do. But I am very fluid when it comes to my career. I'm going to do what's best for me. I think a big thing that I've gotten into now, and always been, my parents have been very supportive of me using my voice. Very active on Twitter. If anyone ever follows me on Twitter, I'm very active on talking about issues and what's going on. And I think I have shifted into more of an advocacy thing. Like I want to play. Like most people would be like, for how much like you're getting paid to play volleyball, they wouldn't want to keep doing that. And they wouldn't want to be part of a league that's just starting up because it might not financially be there. But to me, it was looked at as like, okay, now I can reach a whole bigger group of people because I'm staying in America playing a sport that's not big here. And I get to use my platform and my voice to share my story and to be an influence to other girls like me who didn't get to watch pro volleyball when I was younger because we didn't have it. So now I've kind of like, how can I use my volleyball? How can I use the platform that I've been given while I'm still playing to impact as many people as possible and doing as many camps and being around in Kentucky as much as I can, because I know that by me being around the game of volleyball here, it's going to help grow it. By me being active still in my community, it's going to still help grow it. And using any time I get asked to do a podcast or things like that to do it, because my voice might be changing someone or helping someone. And if I can help one person be a better version of themselves, then I am happy and content. And I know that is God's plan for me, because I know that I've been given the platform and I need to use it to the best of my ability, because one day I may not have it anymore.
You've been killing this whole episode. from the first word you said, you've just been dropping firebombs and it's so dope to hear your perspective and how, you know, it's not about the money. You know, like money's good. You know, money helps us, but you're saying, you know, my voice can have maybe a bigger impact than what money can possibly do right now. And that's admirable, you know, like that's dope to hear. And I'm glad you're, so I'm guessing you're so AU year three, we're going to see you out there.
Hopefully. Okay. Working on that. So okay. Hopefully. Yes, but
I had a great time going to the last day, so I just want to come back and do and visit more games because I'm from Dallas, so I would have to go back and watch more matches.
I'm hoping it gains more traction because you know last year or this past year was the first year that we were able to have fans, and so I'm hoping entertainment advertisement wise it gets out a little bit more. I mean, every time I went somewhere in Dallas, I was like, we're playing volleyball here. And we went and visited a couple of clubs, but I mean, Dallas is such a big city that like, I feel like we could still be doing so much more to get the word out there. And I'm hoping that we get bigger TV time. Cause I know like sometimes even my family was struggling to be able to watch me play and they have every sports package known to man. So I'm hoping that it becomes a little bit more accessible so people get to watch it, but also help grow the league and help us grow as players as well. So I'm really hopeful for the future.
Oh, and then the last question for you. So where are you at? Social media wise, what's your username we can kind of mention right now?
Leah Edmond 13.
On everything?
On everything. Right. Instagram, Twitter, all the stuff. Very active on Twitter though.
I gotta follow you now. I'm curious.
I get into some pretty heated conversations, okay. You know, but I like the heat. I like doing, especially Black History. Okay. I did last year. I did the whole month of February. I did like a Black History thing where every day I talked about a person that like, not famous person. I feel like Black History, we always like Martin Luther King and Rosa Parks and all that stuff. I'm like, oh no. We got all these other people like that you have no clue about what they did. And so I will always advocate for that in our schools. And that's what I'm working on too. Trying to get the real history put in there and intertwining African-American history with US history, because it's the same thing. Happen on American soil, you need to talk about it. That's my mantra. If it happened here, you gotta talk about it, no matter how good or bad it may be. And I will always be the first person to put out some type of history fact or call somebody out. And I will always be the first person to say something about women in sports, because it needs to be said to my 3,000 followers. Someone's gonna see it and someone's gonna be impacted. So I might as well say something.
Someone's going to hear this and they're going to be impacted. And I think it's going to be a lot of people going to get some eye open through this conversation for sure.
Yeah.
Well, I appreciate you taking the time. And Luna, if you hear me,
she's knocked out.
I was like, man, she's quiet. There was no barking at all. Man, I was like,
she's usually chill, but she's laid out. She's like at night, she's like a watchdog. So all she does is she paces the house the entire day, night. And then she sleeps all day because she never slept at night. So she looked up at me because she heard me say her name. But yeah, she's over here knocked out on the floor.
Awesome. Well, Leah, well, enjoy Kentucky.
I will.
And keep changing the game.
I will try my very best. Thank you for having me. I enjoyed the conversation.
Likewise. Talk to you soon.
Okay. Bye.
Yo, thanks for listening to this episode of the 9 Points Started With a Dream podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please comment, share, leave a review. We would love to hear your thoughts. You can find more athlete-driven content at 9point.com. Till the next episode, you're only one opportunity away. Peace.